right, we're back. And my next guest is Svitgard. How are you?
I'm good.
And I'm going to mispronounce your last name, so I'm going to let you pronounce your last name.
Dustelo.
Yeah, see, I would have really made that a mess. Okay, let's do that slowly.
Dustelo.
Dustelo.
Yeah.
Am I close? Dustelo.
Yes.
Okay, Svitgard Dustelo. See, I messed it up the second time, but I'm close.
You're very close. You're actually an American mouth can say that sound, the ooh sound. It's a German sound.
And it's very hard.
Most Americans can't make that sound.
Do.
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. We'll just stick with first names for right now. How's that?
That's good.
Well, welcome. Thanks for agreeing to be on the air. We appreciate it. I'm not sure who twisted your arm. I think a board member must have talked to you. Was it Miss Judy?
It was Miss Judy.
Uh-huh.
Of course.
Of course. And you guys work together, actually, don't you?
Yeah, on Judy works in the Ocean Science Discovery Program. And so we have worked together for many, many years. But I first met Judy when my son was in fourth grade, and she was his classroom teacher.
Really? Well, that's cool. Now, Judy taught at Peterson? No, where did you, which school?
At East Elementary.
At East, okay. Okay. So at East Elementary, is your son still in school?
He's in college now.
Ah, okay. So that was a little while ago.
Yes, that was a while ago.
Okay. So we were just barely beginning to talk off the air here about when you got to Alaska. Did you arrive in Kodiak first, or did you live somewhere else in Alaska first?
No, I lived in Juneau for 5 years.
Oh, you did?
Okay. I came to Alaska to do my PhD at the School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences in Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
And
when was that?
That was in 1997.
Okay.
And then 5 years later, I finished my PhD. And in the meantime, I had gotten married and had a little boy. And my first job offer was here in Kodiak. So I came to Kodiak in 2002 and worked for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game first.
Oh, that's where you were first. Okay, uh-huh. Okay. I don't know if I remembered that. Apparently not. So what did you do for the Fish and Game, Alaska Department of Fish and Game?
For the first year, I was an assistant area management biologist out in the Shumagin Islands. And
that'd be
then
fun.
That was a lot of fun, flying around and looking at salmon streams in
I
that
bet it's
part
beautiful
of the
world.
Too, it's
yeah.
Very beautiful.
Oh, wow.
And but it's kind of hard on the family to be out there
sure.
for 5 months and then back in town for the rest of the year. So after a year, I switched over into research mm-hmm. in the Department of Fish and Game and worked around Kodiak. And I did that for 4 years. And then I started my own business in marine science education.
And what's that called?
Well, the program is called the Ocean Science Discovery Program.
Okay.
And I just recently I'm in the process of turning it into a business and expanding a little bit. And I will be calling that the Kodiak Environmental Education Program.
KEEP.
Very good.
Uh-huh. I like that, Kodiak Environmental Education Program. So you're going beyond the region of just the ocean and marine sciences. Are you trying to broaden that a little bit?
I am trying to broaden it a little more into general environmental mm-hmm, education.
Mm-hmm.
But the main idea behind KEEP is that as our education funding is declining, I'm trying to get outside funders to give us money so that we can complement our education here in Kodiak.
Sure. And so you can have other
programs. Keep offering these cool marine science programs, even if our district really doesn't have the funding for it anymore.
Good. And you and Judy have worked together on the environmental education project, the ocean, I forget the title.
Yeah,
the ocean.
When I first started the Ocean Science Discovery Program, I needed somebody to help me with that because it was more than a one-person show. And at the same time, Judy was retiring from her, from being a teacher. And knowing her, I knew that she didn't really want to let go of being with kids and educating kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were just a great fit.
She had the education background and you had the science background.
Precisely.
Perfect. Perfect match. Cool. And that program's been around for a while now.
Yes. Well, we really actually started with the very first part of it when my son was in fourth grade in her classroom.
Oh, wow.
And
that
then
far back.
I started developing it over a few years. And, yeah, it's been running for many years now.
That's great. And it's a good program. I'm glad you're going to continue keeping those environmental education programs going. That's good.
That's when my heart is in, and that's what I want to keep it alive.
Yeah.
And build it up some more.
Are you able to access and use some of the research areas? Do you need access to some of the research buildings and some of that still?
Absolutely. So the program brings hands-on science into the classrooms. So we have live animals in almost any one of those marine science units. And especially with the smaller kids, we bring in crabs and sea cucumbers and sea urchins and baleen from whales. And there's a lot of hands-on stuff. And then in fifth grade, for example, they do an experiment with sea stars.
Really?
So they have live sea stars and they're measuring the arms and they're using stopwatches to take the time it turns a sea star to turn over. And so there's a lot of hands-on science going on, adjusted to the age level. But it absolutely only works because of that collaboration with NOAA in town.
Mm-hmm.
And we have access to the seawater lab. We can keep the animals there. And it's been a great success. I mean, even though the animals get a little stressed when they're in
when
a
they're
classroom,
handled, sure.
when
yeah.
they are handled, most of those animals are living 5 years.
Hmm.
I've had some sea stars and sea urchins for many, many years down there.
That are part of the project.
That are, yeah, in the education.
So now I'm very curious. How long does it take for a sea star to turn over? How long does it take on an average?
Well, that depends on the sea star.
I knew there was going to be an answer like that. But they're like, okay.
So we ask the question if it depends on the size of the sea star.
Okay.
And
makes sense.
Well, we also test two different species and have the students compare. And I'm not going to give the answers away.
I can
yet.
Tell that you are not giving any answers. All right, I'll just have to experiment myself.
We'll invite you in next time.
Perfect. That would be great. I'd love to see how that works. So you've got the connection with the education and you've got the connection with NOAA, which is a wonderful connection for Kodiak in general to have those sea lab capabilities here in town and all the research that goes on. You're involved, too, with, the name is escaping me, the environmental science project that happens with the refuge every couple of years. Oh, I'll think of it while we're off talking about something else. Anyway, it brings in a bunch of different scientists, and the kids are doing all kinds of different projects. And why can't I think of the name of this? I'll think of it later. And are you still doing some work with marine debris as well?
Oh, yeah. I'm right now also working for Island Trails Network.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a part-time job that I'm doing and helping mostly ITN doing outreach into the classrooms and also with volunteers. Right now we have a program going on where every Saturday we clean up a beach along the road system. And we have a group of volunteers that come back, and people do this for exercise and for, it just feels good. It feels good to be part of making your environment look better.
So that's happening, and how do people find out about participating in that?
You go online, you look at Island Trails Network,
mm-hmm.
and then there is a part on the website that says Action,
mm-hmm.
and when you go in there, you find marine debris, road system, and then you can actually sign up to get the invitation every week.
Oh, good.
I've also posted a few flyers around town, although we're getting to the end of April, so I need to renew those flyers.
Make sure people know what's coming up.
Right.
Will you be continuing that program through May then?
ITN is actually hiring somebody right now to step into that for the summer.
Okay.
But we will definitely, I will be continuing it throughout May.
So okay.
Until the end of May. And then in June, probably
somebody else will be continuing. Okay. And, all right, so we've talked a little bit about what you do here as far as your professional career goes.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it that keeps you here in Kodiak?
Well, as you can tell, I'm pretty passionate about my professional life. And really, I don't make a big difference between professional life and personal life. What keeps me in Kodiak every day, you can take an hour and it's basically like an hour vacation. You go hiking, you have the mountains, you have the beaches. You can look at glaciers around you. There's snow-capped mountains, or you can look upon the ocean and just get that peace of mind that the ocean gives you. It's just a dream of a place.
That's a great way to describe it, a mini vacation in just an hour. Yeah.
So in the summer, I also work as a wildlife guide, a tour guide.
Really?
And there are people that come here thousands of miles just to experience this. And, you know, living here, you get to do it over a cup of coffee every day.
Right, on your lunch break,
yes.
Whatever you decide, yes.
Yes.
We are lucky, aren't we?
We are incredibly lucky to be
here.
Yeah,
we really are.
Anymore when I go back and visit my family, I'm originally from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
If I spend more than 2 weeks traveling, I get homesick.
Yeah. I'm the same way. 2 weeks is about the limit of, it's like, okay, I'm ready to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Just the richness that we have here in environment and people and all kinds of things.
Well, it's just a peace of mind that I don't find in more populated places.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for you, there's that ocean piece.
Yes.
That's all around us. Did you grow up in Germany? Were you near the ocean?
No, I was landlocked. I actually grew up on a farm.
You did? Huh. What kind of a farm?
It was a small farm. They had a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
They had cows. They had pigs. The other neighbor had horses, which was where I spent a lot of my time. They had chickens. They had asparagus.
Really?
And yeah.
Was that like a money crop for them, asparagus? Or?
Yeah, asparagus you only get in for like six weeks.
Yeah, not very long.
It's just June, so it's a a crop that you only have for a little while of the year, and they would sell it locally. And yeah.
So was it, I wonder if asparagus is a good rotation crop. Could you rotate it into a field that was growing something else the year before? Or, you know how you sort of rotate your crops to
Yes, but
protect
asparagus
the soil?
Needs a few years.
Does it?
So
to really
you
get
need
going?
To keep it in one place for several years
okay.
before it really produces well.
Huh. Interesting.
And then after a few years, it gets too old, and then you have to take it out.
And do something else. Yeah, we used to, we'd pick wild asparagus along the riverbanks. Hmm. And, but I've never really been around a farm that grew asparagus.
Well, this is
it.
The, like, the white asparagus.
Oh, yeah.
Before it actually comes out and mm-hmm. turns green.
Yeah.
So you have to get up before the sun comes up, go out into the field and dig the shoots out of the ground.
Really?
Before they actually poke their heads out.
To get them while they're white.
As soon as they poke their heads out, they turn green
the
or
photosynthesis
blue.
Goes into...
And go bitter.
Wow. Huh.
So
interesting.
As a teenager, I would, on the weekends, I'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go pick asparagus.
So it was all picked by hand then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wow. Hey, you're making me hungry. Sounds good. Asparagus. Who knew?
Yeah, I didn't expect us to go there in our
in the conversation. Well, you know. We all start somewhere. Yeah, we all have different backgrounds. So from the farming background, how did you end up in the field that you're in?
It's almost funny, but when my parents bought the first color TV,
mm-hmm.
the first show I saw on there was about Hans Haas and Jacques Cousteau diving.
Ha.
And I was just blown away and fascinated by this underwater world.
It was magic.
It was just magic, and it stuck with me. And I was always interested in everything life and biology and mm-hmm. growing and nature. And when I was in high school, I had a chance to start diving, scuba diving, and I just got more and more fascinated about anything underwater, and it just grew into this passion. I just kept that alive.
I'd say you did a good job of keeping that alive. That must have been, first of all, to go from, did you have a black and white television before
mm-hmm.
you had the color?
Mm-hmm.
To go from the black and white television and then to go to the magic of what Jacques Cousteau was seeing and filming, that must have been incredible.
Yes,
just
it was
obviously
very forming for me. Very powerful.
Made a big impact for you. It's funny, you're the second person today I've talked to who Jacques Cousteau made a big impact on their life. Marion
oh,
Owen
wow.
was the other one. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's interesting.
It is interesting. So if you have never seen any of his films or shows, look them up. Pretty amazing stuff. Even today, when the technology has moved so far from what he was doing, but
yeah,
pretty amazing stuff. So, you said so it was a small family farm then, basically in Germany.
It was not my family's farm.
Okay.
It was a neighbor's, which is rented a house there on
right.
the property.
Okay. Okay. They had a lot of that in where I grew up, too, in the Midwest, where you might have a farmhouse and the farm was all around you, but you weren't the farmer,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Yes.
But, yeah.
But as a kid growing up there, you still
You're
had
a part
the,
of it, yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's pretty cool. So you were always interested in the sciences, and did you go, how did you get from Germany to the University of Alaska?
So when I was in high school, I had the opportunity to take part in an exchange year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was an exchange student. And even back then, when I filled out my application, I wrote in there that I really wanted to go to the coast and I wanted to be close to the ocean. And so
had
they
you
sent
already
me
seen
to
the Jacques Cousteau by then?
Yes.
And you'd started
so
diving by then?
Uh-huh.
Okay, all right.
And they sent me to Washington State.
Okay.
And so I spent...
Eastern or Western part?
Well, to the coast.
Good.
So I spent the year in Medina, Washington, and had a wonderful host family that I'm still friends with, even up to today, and I was 16 back then. And that kind of started this whole connection to the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And after I graduated, I went back and visited my host family. And actually, after I actually already had my master's from the university in Germany, I went back and visited my host family. And my host mom was like, so what's next? What are you going to do? And I told her that I was really interested in oil toxicology.
Really?
And she had a connection with the Prince William Sound Science Center in Cordova, Alaska. Mm. And 2 weeks later, I was an intern there.
Oh, wow. Good connections. Very good connections. Well, good. So then you went from Cordova and ended up then going into the university system?
Well, I did that intern that first year and then made my own connections, came back for another internship the next year, and at that time connected with a professor in Juneau and wrote a grant proposal basically for a research study. And then it took quite a bit of time, but I applied to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I had this research idea, and I had the backing of the Auk Bay Lab, that connection with oil spill research. And by 1997 in the fall, I went to Juneau and started my PhD.
Nice. So you've been pretty focused from the time that you started. I mean, you have just boom.
I have been very lucky that I have a passion.
That's a good way to look at it. That's because some people don't.
Right.
And you're right. You are lucky.
It is very lucky when you know one thing that just keeps you going.
Yeah. It's certainly afforded you an interesting life and many interesting things to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were some incredible highlights.
I'll bet. So how about if we take a quick little music break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little more.
I was wondering if we were going to listen to some music.
You feel like, oh, come on, Pam, let's play the music. Do you want to start? Oops, wait, let me go to your list. Should we start with the first one on
sure.
the list? Does that sound good? Do you want to tell us a little bit about why that song's important? Or
I think we have talked a lot about why that song's important.
All right, we'll just play it.
Listen to it.
All right, sounds good.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see an octopus's garden with me. I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. We would be warm below the storm in our little hideaway beneath the waves, resting our head on the seabed in an octopus's garden near a cave. We would sing
in the shade. About the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
A set of eyelash extensions. Come down to Vision Salon today, and while you're here, sign her up for our special Mother's Day drawing, 1250 East Marine Way.
All right, we're back. The Beatles with Octopus's Garden, which is sort of right up your alley, right?
Yeah, being in an octopus's garden is the best place.
So we were talking about, you were talking about that you are very lucky because you have a passion, and I was mentioning how focused you have been. But why is it important? Why is ocean science and environmental education so important?
So, environmentally, of course, we have a lot of problems that our environment is dealing with that, in most cases, are caused by us.
Us, the humans.
So if you walk along a beach today, there's not a single beach, even way out here in Kodiak, that is not impacted by trash, by plastic. Mm-hmm. We have temperatures in the ocean that have not been seen before. We have situations in the Bering Sea with the cold barrier missing into the Barents Sea that we have not seen before. We have the Northwest Passage opening. We are getting ships now through there.
Which is just amazing.
Which was unheard of 15 years ago. So there's a lot of change going on in the ocean, and yet we have politicians that are closing their eyes and even negating the very facts in front of us. And I believe that education is the key to bringing people around to change their ways or to also adapt to the change that's inevitable around us.
And to move forward one way or another.
Yes.
I think at this point we're at a point where adaptation is... I think we're going to have to adapt, but if we don't make change, we're going to have to adapt a whole lot more than we want to, probably. So... But I agree with you, as you walk the beaches here in Kodiak, that's a very simplistic way for us to be able to look around and say, yeah, there's impact everywhere. You know, when you go up into the grasses above the tide lines in the beaches and you're still finding plastic, it's pretty obvious that there's some impacts.
And the way I look at the marine debris problem is really, it's a different kind of an oil spill.
Never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So plastic is an oil
oil-based
product. And the way we humans treat it is, well, it just ends up in the environment and it spills everywhere. And it's a little bit an obvious sign of how we don't think about what we do sometimes.
Consequences. Sometimes the consequences miss us.
Right. Yeah. And I just believe that we need to keep those channels of communication open and talk to each other and make it into a group effort to know our problems and think about how we can solve them together.
Yeah. Well, the work that you're doing with your company and with the environmental education processes that you've done has been pretty remarkable in the amount of time that you've been here. You've been here now 20-ish years, right? Here in Kodiak, somewhere mm-hmm. in that range. Yeah. And so you've had, boy, have you ever sat down and figured out how many students you've had go through your education pieces? Have you ever just kind of counted them up in your head? That's all those young minds that you have been able to teach.
Yeah, of course, it depends. Most students I only see for a couple of hours
sure.
out of a whole year. And there's only so much impact you can do in a couple of hours.
But it's surprising what they take away.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. There's one favorite story I have.
Okay.
Where I was teaching a fifth grade class.
Mm-hmm.
And in the opening, the first sentences, I said, well, were you guys here last year? Do you remember what we did last year? And one little girl raised her hand and she told me the entire concept of the third grade unit.
Wow.
And I said, wow, that was impressive. But that was 2 years ago. And she blushed and she was like, I was sick last year.
Oh,
and I
wow.
was, bless her heart, she remembered. I was so impressed. That really made my day,
I'll
my
bet.
Year.
I'll bet. That is
so
very impressive.
So sometimes, yes, you strike out.
And, yeah.
And you really reach a student. But I do believe that to have a really worthy program, you need to have that exposure first, but then also some kind of follow-up that goes deeper,
mm-hmm.
where the students have more time to explore something and
yeah.
and really feel into it if that's their thing.
Yeah, well, hopefully they have opportunities to do that. I mean, we're in a pretty amazing place, as we talked about, to just be surrounded by the environment in the first place and to experience it in ways that kids in cities might not, or kids in other locations might not have yeah. an opportunity.
And again, like I said, I was lucky to find my passion. Our kids today have so many options around them. It's mm-hmm. often hard for them
to narrow in and
find what they really want to do.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to wrap up here in a few
uh-huh.
minutes. And I wanted to thank you for coming in and talking with me about all of this. And I hope it wasn't too uncomfortable for you, but it's been fun talking to you about your programs and all the work that you do.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about them. That's really exciting. If anybody wants to learn more about KEEP, there's a website out. It's called keepkodiak.com.
Keepkodiak.com. Okay.
Just one word. And do we have time for one more song?
We absolutely do. Yes.
So let's skip that next one and go to the
to that one
after that. No.
Oh, this one.
That one.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll go
so
to that.
So that song plays a little bit to those kids that don't necessarily... So when we talk about education, we are always just thinking about that part. But what we sometimes forget when we're educating kids is that every single kid deals with their own set of problems and their own kind of issues in life, and that's sometimes hard to do while you're supposed to be putting all your energy into education. And that's kind of, for me, where that song is going.
All right. Svitgard, thank you again for coming in and talking with me. I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All right, let's play this song, and we might
no
be back.
No matter what.
No matter what.
When I was a young boy, I was scared of growing up. I didn't understand it, but I was terrified of love. Felt like I had to choose, but it was out of my control. I needed to be saved, I was going crazy on my own. It took me years to tell my mother I expected the worst. I gathered all the courage in the world. She said, I love you no matter what. I just want you to be happy and always be who you are. She wrapped her arms around me, said, don't try to be what you're not, 'cause I love you no matter what. She loves me no matter what. I got a little older, wishing all my time away, riding on the pavement, every sunny day was gray. I trusted in my friends, then all my world came crashing down. I wish I never said a thing, 'cause to them I'm a stranger now. I ran home, I saw my mother, felt like I had a heart of glass about to break. She said, I love you no matter what. I just want you to be happy and always be who you are. She wrapped her arms around me, said, don't try to be what you're not, 'cause I love you. The earth with my head held higher. I got the love that I need, but I was still missing one special piece. My father looked at me. He said, I love you no matter what. I just want you to be happy and always be. Don't try to be what you're not, 'cause I love you no matter what. He loves me no matter what. And they love me no matter
Svitgard, thank you again for coming in and talking with us. And we're going to go to All Things Considered here in a moment. But keep us informed about how your environmental education projects are going. And
yes.
It'd be interesting to hear how that all works out.
Okay, thank you. And I will make sure to keep you updated.
All right, that sounds good. Thank you.